This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Roxanne Kamsey. This year, almost half of Americans reported experiencing medium to high levels of distress. And according to a survey by OnePoll, around 17% of Americans sought out therapy for the first time during the pandemic. But accessing therapy is an elusive process for many people. How do you even begin? Many of us are increasingly turning to our phones for an assist. Some of the options on the App Store are, according to Molly Fisher, features writer at New York Magazine and The Cut, quote, the digital equivalent of a scented candle. And then there are the apps that vow to connect you not only to a real person, but to a real therapist.
My New Year's resolution? Get happy. Start therapy today. Sign up for BetterHelp and get matched with a licensed counselor.
A competing company, Talkspace, pledges unprecedented access to your very own mental health professional and also an end to misery.
Finding happiness is not a privilege of the few. With our unlimited messaging therapy, you can write to your therapist whenever it's convenient for you. It's almost like your therapist is always with you. You can
hear. But do these apps deliver on what they're selling? Fisher, author of the article The Therapy App Fantasy in The Cut, has her doubts. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
One of the things that you write is, unlike many of the problems tech startups have set out to solve, this one actually exists. It's hard to find a therapist.
There are all kinds of ways to break that down and quantify exactly how grave the shortage is. I mean, if you're looking for a therapist of color, if you're looking for a therapist who speaks Spanish, it's going to be much, much more difficult to find someone who meets your needs. Even in a place like New York City, where there are plenty of therapists in comparison to other places, it still is really difficult to find someone who takes your insurance, who you can afford if they don't take your insurance, who has openings in their schedule. The idea that there could be a better way to find a therapist is very enticing for a lot of reasons. And I think it's in some ways no surprise that apps have set out to solve it.
Could you explain a little bit about how these apps actually work?
A comparison that came up with a number of the people I spoke to, both therapists and clients who had used these apps, was to dating apps. The matchmaking aspect is actually not super impressive. I, to sort of get a feel for the technology, decided to go through the process of signing up for Talkspace. So, you know, I completed this questionnaire. I think I said that I had anxiety, which was and is true, and that I was hoping to be matched with a female therapist. I clicked the button and waited for the thing to whir along and kind of spit out some names. And at the top of the screen, when it presented me with results, it said, we've prioritized female therapists who specialize in anxiety. And below that were three men. So I think that the idea that this is super sophisticated matching algorithmic technology is pretty questionable.
On a practical level, am I texting with my therapist, or how does that actually work?
While this is often described as text therapy, it's really a lot more like email because it's asynchronous, which means that you're sending a message and then probably sometime in the next day or so, your therapist is responding. In some cases, it is possible to sign up for scheduled live text sessions with a therapist. For the most part, what you're getting is something more like a running email exchange. And I think it shouldn't come as a surprise that that's pretty far afield from what most therapists are trained to do. A lot of their skills have to do with having a conversation with someone. And all of that kind of goes out the window if you're doing back and forth email exchange. But I think it makes a lot of sense that companies are trying to make it viable anyway, because it's the way to make therapy more scalable. I think the hope is that if you are exchanging text messages with your clients, you'll be able to take on a higher caseload than you would if you were seeing them all for hour-long weekly appointments.
So you write that a report last year from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that people of color, essential workers, and unpaid caregivers were disproportionately hard hit with mental health issues, you know, this last year that we've been in particularly. Does this new technology make access to mental health more equitable?
This is one of the things that I found most upsetting in working on this story, was that these apps do really want to present themselves as offering a solution to these problems of equity and access. You know, I think Talkspace's tagline is therapy for all.
You have to show up for yourself. Therapy works. It helped me, and it can help you too. Brought to you by Talkspace, therapy for all.
But at the same time, they're really expensive. A Talkspace plan that would provide you with 4 video visits a month, although I should say also they're half hour long as opposed to hour long, which is generally standard in the real world. It would cost almost $400 a month. These aren't services that are designed to help the people with the most need. They're services that, like Uber or like Caviar or DoorDash or something, are making amenities more available to people who are already people who have pretty decent access.
Something that is in your story is that the mayor of Reno, a mental health app user herself, convinced council members of her city to put $1.3 million in CARES Act funding toward giving all residents older than 13 access to Talkspace. By late March, more than 1,300 Reno residents had signed up.
In my conversations with the mayor, what was really clear is that, you know, I don't think she was naive in proposing the Talkspace plan. She was having a difficult time. She had lost a couple of family members in close succession and was having trouble finding a therapist, and happened to see a Talkspace ad with Michael Phelps.
Online therapy is not about time and place. It's just as easy as joining a video call or texting with a friend. Don't wait to feel better. Get started with a single message.
She signed up and ended up having a good relationship with the person she found and who she was texting with. So she had a positive experience, but I think she also, when she talks about the plan and what she hoped to achieve with it, saw it as sort of a first step and something that would be better than nothing for the people of Reno. Her hope was that people who might not otherwise have gotten therapy at all would have a chance to try it out in a kind of low stakes, low risk, non-threatening way.
The mayor of Reno felt this was better than having nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you mention in your article, you quote one of my favorite tech commentators on the planet, Sherry Turkle. And mm-hmm. Turkle has told us that technological solutions often start out as being regarded as better than nothing. And then over time, they begin to supplant the traditional options. So once the traditional options disappear, the technological solutions come to be treated as better than anything.
I think it's too soon to say that they've followed that trajectory, but it does worry me, and it does feel like the kind of path we're on. The apps don't really solve the underlying problem of access, the fact that there, you know, simply aren't enough therapists for all the people who need them. They really just paper over it. In the time between when I started writing the piece, reporting it, and actually published it, Talkspace went public in a $1.4 billion deal. So they're expanding, they're growing, you know, they're becoming more permanently enmeshed with our healthcare system and with the way people get mental health care in this country. And I think that the more companies do that and the more they become part of the ecosystem of employers and insurance companies and just ordinary people trying to get a therapist, the harder it's going to be to turn back to a world where, you know, we could have tried to kind of improve the way people access therapy in the real world.
I think that's a really great place to end this session. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
Molly Fisher is a features writer at New York Magazine and The Cut.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.